All right, now we're underway. Okay, we're underway with Daniel chapter 12, our final session in Daniel. And this will be session 39, page 293, chapter 12, verse 1. Now, by way of review, last week we finished up looking at the reviewing the empires of the times of the Gentiles. And remember, that's one of the major themes of Daniel. A chronological walk through the times of the Gentiles. Daniel being a chronological book and giving us the chronological key to prophecy or eschatology in the Old Testament, and the book of Revelation doing the same thing for us in the New Testament, and the two books, of course, coordinating to give us a full chronological step-by-step walk through eschatology. So quickly now, first of all, the first empire that would affect Israel during the times of the Gentiles was the Babylonian Empire, followed by the Medo-Persians, who were defeated in turn by Alexander the Great, and the Greeks, who next fell to the Fourth Empire, Rome, or imperialism. And we noted that the Fourth Empire is characterized by change and goes through a number of different steps. The first step is the United stage. Then it changed to the two-division stage. This is the stage we're living in right now. This two-division stage will eventually give way to the one-world government stage, and we can see that happening before our eyes. A one-world government is on everybody's lips these days, isn't it? A worldwide economic system, a worldwide government, etc. This one-world government stage will prove unwieldy, and it will break down into the ten-division stage. And this is where verse 40 of Daniel 11 came in. We looked at the Antichrist war against the ten kings. Remember, he's the little horn who uproots seven of the horns. Uproots three of the horns. The other seven submit to him. He defeats three of the kings that make up this ten-division stage of the Roman Empire worldwide. Remember, this is a worldwide stage. And the other kings then submit to his leadership. Remember, we learned last week that he would be attacked by the king of the south, and in chapter 11, that is consistently Egypt. So Egypt apparently is the representative of some kind of a continental union, something bigger than the land of Egypt. Well, anyway, this king is defeated, and when he's defeated, the Antichrist goes on then to conquer Libya and Ethiopia, which is today biblical Sudan. And once those two nations are conquered, then all of Africa lies before him. And remember, these kings are not petty kings of a tiny little states. These are kings of the ten-division worldwide government. So apparently, the king that he defeats here is the leader of the African Union. All of Africa appears to come under his control with the defeat of Libya and Ethiopia, or again, modern Sudan. And you know, the African Union already exists today. This particular continental union is not a figment of our imagination. This is it. It exists today. And in fact, continental unions are something that world governments are thinking of. In fact, there are three continental unions existing today: the South American Union, the African Union, and the Union of European States there, the EU. And someday the world will be divided up into ten of these things. So Antichrist will defeat three of the kings of these continental unions, and then the rest of the world, the other seven, will submit to his leadership. Okay, make sense?
We will submit to his leadership because of his power.
Because of his power. Oh, by the way, we're going to move quickly through this chapter, so I'm probably not going to be answering questions. If you have questions, unless they're very brief, see me after class, okay? Otherwise, we'll never get through this final chapter. All right, so our chapter 11 told us that he would defeat the king of the south, and all these compass points only make sense if the Antichrist is located in Israel when he does this conquering. He also will defeat the king of the east, which in chapter 11 is Iraq or Babylon. Now, that would be the king of the east. It must include more than just Iraq. or Babylon. It must include some kind of a continental union as well, because this is not a petty king. This is a king who represents one-tenth of the world government. And he will defeat the king of the north in chapter 11. That's Syria. But again, it must mean more than just Syria, because this king is another king that represents one-tenth of the world government. So when these three kings are defeated, he becomes the dictator of the world. And it may be that three corners of three continental unions all come and meet together in this little corner of the world. We'll have to see exactly how they are organized, if we're still here. If we're still here. We may not be. So after the Antichrist defeats those three kings, we then move into the final stage of the Fourth Empire, Rome or Imperialism. We get into the Antichrist stage, and this happens in the middle of the tribulation period. And we're also told that he will erect his royal military tent between the seas. The westernmost sea would be the Mediterranean Sea. The eastern sea would be the Dead Sea. Between the seas on the beautiful Holy Mountain, which of course would be a reference to Jerusalem. So he apparently will erect his headquarters tent up on the Temple Mount. Now here I did a chart for you, of an abbreviated chart of Dr. Fruchtenbaum's analysis of all the data in Revelation and the Book of Daniel. This is a chart listing in his evaluation of the chronological events that happen in the middle of the tribulation period. The 3.5-year point of the tribulation period is going to be a busy time. It'll see the Second Worldwide War of the Tribulation. It will witness the Antichrist being killed, Satan being cast down to earth, and that will facilitate the resurrection of the Antichrist. Eventually, the three kings will be killed, and the seven will submit to his rule. After becoming world dictator, he will destroy ecclesiastical Babylon, which is the religious system that he hates. He'll focus all worship on himself. He will also attack the two witnesses of the true religion, the two witnesses sent by God. He will kill them, and then he will institute worship of himself, the worship of the Antichrist that is promoted by the false prophet and by the mark of the beast, 666. Remember, 666 is a mark of religious loyalty. Once you take that mark, you are unsaved. No chance that you can be saved. So whoever takes that mark in the middle of the tribulation is bound for a godless eternity. That mark, 666, also allows you entrance into the economic system. So not only is it a religious mark, it is an important economic mark as well. He will then break his 7-year covenant with Israel, set up the abomination of desolation, and begin the tribulation holocaust, the worldwide persecution of the Jewish people. So whether it happens in exactly this chronological order, we'll see, or maybe we won't see. Maybe we'll be told about it. I expect we'll be seeing it. I believe in a pre-trib rapture. But the middle of the tribulation is going to be a busy time, right? Of course, right. All righty. So, in chapter 11, verse 36, to chapter 12, verse 1, we have been in the tribulation period, looking at the events of the tribulation. So let's pick it up now on page 293, top of the page, point 6, Michael and Israel, chapter 12, verse 1. Chapter 12, verse 1. Everybody there? All set? All righty, let's look at verse 1. Now at that time, Michael, the chief priest, chief prince, who stands guard over the sons of your people, will arise. And there will be a time of distress such as never occurred since there was a nation until that time. And at that time, your people, everyone who is found written in the book, will be rescued. Will be rescued. All right, so our time frame again is the tribulation period. The time of the end, in verse consistent with all in verse 40, consistent with that statement in verse 40, the time of the end. So we believe that chapter 12 deals with the end times, eschatology, and we're not alone in that belief. The rabbis would agree. Here is the comments you would find in the Sanchino books of the Bible, the commentary on Daniel, page 100, the rabbi writes, "This chapter, chapter 12, is generally taken by Jewish authorities to refer to the remote future, which will herald the advent of the Messianic era." We agree. We agree. And then in the Art Scroll Tanakh series, page 319 on Daniel, the rabbi writes, "This generation will see the pangs of the Messiah." That's another term for the tribulation period, the time of Jacob's trouble. Because the rabbis know it's going to be literally hell on earth for the Jewish community. "This generation will see the pangs of the Messiah, the tribulations of the generation of the Messiah described in Sanhedrin 97b. That's a reference to the Talmud. Rabbi Yochanan, speaking about these pangs of the Messiah, exclaimed, 'Let the Messiah come, but may I not see it.'" Okay, he wants the Messiah to come, but he knows the coming of the Messiah is accompanied by the time of Jacob's trouble. He knows that. So he doesn't want to be around to be part of that. So we agree with the rabbis. This is speaking of the tribulation period just prior to the advent of the kingdom. All right, so we would agree with the rabbis there. Let's take a look at point B in your outline. The time of the end, Michael will stand up. And we've run across Michael before, right? He's the archangel. Point two states that he will stand up. Now that term, stand up, is a military term. And so this indicates to us that he will now enter into an angelic war. Michael will now enter into an angelic war. And that's explained very clearly to us in point B. The cross-reference is Revelation 12, 7 through 9, which describe the wars against Satan and the fallen angels. So here's where we get a confluence of the book of Revelation with the book of Daniel. Revelation 12, verses 7 through 9. "And there was war in heaven, Michael and his angels waging war with the dragon. The dragon and his angels waged war, and they were not strong enough. And there was no longer a place found for them in heaven. And the great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him." So there's our look into that angelic conflict that Michael is part of. Point C, Michael is also called the Great Prince. He's also entitled the Great Prince. C1, he's great because he's the archangel. C2, he's called a prince because he's the guardian angel over Israel. Point D, notice his job. He stands for the children of your people. Point D1, standing for is a Hebrew idiom for fighting for. He's fighting for, or standing with your people. Now point two, who's he talking to? Daniel, right? Who is Daniel's people? Jewish people, right? This is not a reference to the church, as an amillennialist would teach, or as a replacement theologian would teach. This is not a reference to the church. It's a reference to Daniel's people. Michael is the guardian angel over the Jewish people. And so we see an example, point three, we see an example of him standing for the defense of Israel in point three of your outline, Revelation 12, 15, and 16. We'll drop down further in that chapter to verse 15, and we get an example of Michael standing in for the Jewish people. "And the serpent," we already know that Satan, "poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman," we know the woman is Israel already, "so that he might cause her to be swept away with the flood." And what does a flood symbolize consistently in the Bible? Military invasion, right. So we have the Antichrist's armies pursuing Israel as she flees into the wilderness. Where is she going to flee to? Bozrah or Petra, right, okay. But notice what happens. "But the earth helped the woman And the earth opened its mouth and drank up the river which the dragon poured out of his mouth. So Michael will be involved in that defense of Israel. Exactly what he's doing there, I can't tell you. But all I know is that the armies of the Antichrist will not be allowed to overtake the fleeing Jewish people. And we will get to Bozrah or Petra safely. Again, partly due to the ministry of Michael as he stands in our defense. So point D4, Israel will survive the tribulation period because of Michael. That's one of the tools God uses to bring Israel through the tribulation. Notice point E. There shall be a time of trouble. And this is a reference to the Great Tribulation, again brought out in Revelation chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. You see, Revelation 7, 13 and 14 by point 1 there, the cross-reference for you. Revelation 7, 14. Here's how it reads. Then one of the elders answered, saying to me, "These who are clothed in the white robes, and who are they? And where have they come from?" And I said to him, "My Lord, you know." And then he gives John the answer. He said to me, "These are the ones who come out of what? The great tribulation." These are tribulation martyrs. "They have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb." So the reference there is to the tribulation martyrs. And here we're told they come out of the great tribulation, the tribulation period. And the rabbis understand that there will be a very difficult time for Israel and for planet Earth just before the coming of the Messiah. Point E2 brings out another name for the tribulation period. In Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 7, it's also known as the time of Jacob's trouble. Point 2 on your outline. So here's Jeremiah 30, verse 7. Jeremiah laments, "Alas, for that day is great. There is none like it. And it is the time of Jacob's distress." Notice the promise, however, "but he will be saved out of it." So while the tribulation falls upon all of humanity, that is, everybody left on planet Earth after the rapture, while it will fall on all humanity left on planet Earth, it will be especially severe against the Jewish community. And we'll look at why in just a moment. Now, point F at the bottom of the page. The verse goes on to say that such as never was since there was a nation even to that time. Point F1, the idea in that phrase is that the tribulation will supersede all previous persecutions of the Jews. It'll be our last and most severe persecution. It will make the Holocaust of World War II look like a picnic in the park. Yeshua affirmed this in Matthew 24, 21, your cross-reference there at the bottom of the page. Matthew 24, 21, Yeshua says, "For there will be a great tribulation such has not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever will." This is going to be the climax of human history. Now, why did I say the tribulation is going to fall most heavily on the Jewish people? Well, we can answer that question by looking at a few sections of Scripture. I'm going to give you four cross-references. You can write them in at the bottom of the page there. There's plenty of room to do that. But write the question, why so severe on the Jews? Here's four reasons, four cross-references that explain that. First of all, Isaiah chapter 40, verses 1 and 2. And this verse, in context, finds its fulfillment at the beginning of the Messianic kingdom, after the tribulation period. But notice what Isaiah says. He says, "Comfort, O comfort my people, says your God. Speak kindly to Jerusalem and call out to her." So Israel is to be comforted. What is the message of comfort to be given to Israel? Don't take this verse out of context. Keep it in context. What is the comfort to be given to Israel? Her warfare has ended. Has that happened yet? No. Okay, we can't use this verse to comfort Israel yet. Her warfare has ended. Her iniquity has been removed. Are the Jewish people a saved people? No. 99% of us reject the Messiahship of Yeshua. Can't use this verse to comfort the Jewish people today. Finally, last word of comfort to the Jewish people, that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins. Why double? Why do the Jewish people receive double for all our sins? All right, you guys got it. You get an A. All right, let's move on to Luke chapter 12, verse 48. Here's the principle that comes into play. Why do the Jewish people receive double for all our sins? Yeshua says it this way, from everyone who has been given much, much will be required. That's a principle for Israel. That's a principle for you and me today. Double blessing brings double responsibility. Failure to live up to double responsibility brings double punishment. Okay, does that make sense? Now, let's move on here. Romans 2, 8 through 10. Another verse to keep in mind. Romans 2, 8 through 10 explains the blessings that we have received in the Jewish community. This is the double blessing that we have received. Paul goes through it very clearly. But to those who are selfishly ambitious and do not obey the truth, but obey unrighteousness, wrath, and indignation. So judgment comes to the unbeliever. There will be tribulation and distress for every soul of man who does evil, of the Jew first, and also of the Greek. But glory and honor and peace to everyone who does good, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. And the gospel is to what? Go to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. All right, we are prominent because we're the chosen people. Now, why are we prominent? Romans 9, verses 4 and 5. Paul now lists in Romans 9 the blessings that we have received. Notice the context. Who are Israelites? Who is he talking about? Is he talking about the church? No, he's not talking about the church. He's talking about the Israelites. Now, that's not what a replacement theologian would teach you. But I think if you just look at the plain meaning of the text, that's what it says, right? Of course, right. Okay. He's speaking of the Jewish people. To whom belong the adoption as sons? Out of Egypt I brought my son, says God, right? We were considered God's son when we came out of Egypt. So there's a close personal relationship between the Jewish people and our God. Now, this doesn't mean automatic salvation, but there is the adoption of sons. And the glory. Has the Shekinah glory appeared in any other nation in the world? No. Only in Israel. Only to the Jewish people. And the covenants. Here's a reference to the Abrahamic covenant, and it's three sub-covenants. The Abrahamic covenant is an eternal and unconditional covenant. Its three promises are expanded by the Davidic covenant, the land covenant, and the new covenant. All three of them are eternal and unconditional covenants made with the Jewish people. So that's a reference to the Abrahamic covenant. And then he makes a reference to another covenant made with the Jewish people, but a different covenant. He says, and the giving of the law. Now, has any other nation in the world been given a law from God specifically? No, this is a reference to the Mosaic law. And the Mosaic covenant is a temporary and conditional covenant. So here Paul keeps them separate. We have the eternal and unconditional, our Abrahamic covenant, and we have the temporary and conditional Mosaic covenant. Okay, the Jewish people have received the adoption of sons, the glory, the covenants, The giving of the law, the temple service. Is the temple set up in any other country in the world? No. And the promises. We'll take a look at one of those promises today. There are many promises given to the Jewish people. Whose are the fathers? A reference to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Not to George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and whoever. Okay? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And from whom is who? HaMashiach, the Messiah, the Christ, according to the flesh. Here is a reference to the humanity of the Messiah. He was fully man. He was a Jewish man according to the flesh. By the way, I don't know what anti-Semites do with that. They hate the Jews, but they love Jesus, right? Well, if they hate the Jews, they got to hate Jesus, right? He was a Jew. Okay, so from the Jewish people comes the Messiah according to the flesh. And then he's described in divine terms, who is over all, God blessed forever. Amen. So here we see the divine nature of the Messiah brought out. He is fully God and fully man. All right, those are the blessings that the Jewish people have received. That's what's been given to us. Have we lived up to the responsibilities and blessings that we've received? No, of course not. Our history is marked by disobedience, and even today we are a disobedient nation. This is one of the reasons why the tribulation judgments will be more severe upon the Jewish people. Because of double blessing, we receive double punishment. It's not always fun to be a Jew. Okay? I know a lot of people in this world that, oh, I wish I was Jewish. Not always fun to be a Jew, okay? All right, let's move on. Let's move on. Page 294. Page 294, at the top of the page, point G. Here's one of those promises talked about in Romans 9. At that time, your people will be delivered. The promise is that Israel will survive the tribulation period. That's brought out, first of all, in Jeremiah verse 7 of chapter 30. Point 2, the verse reads, it is the time of Jacob's trouble, but, underline this, he shall be delivered out of it. Yeah, it's going to be horrible, but Israel will survive. That's God's promise. And then he describes those that survive. Point H, everyone that shall be found written in the book. Now, two possible books could be referred to here. It's possible, we don't know which one, maybe it's both, but it's singular. The possibilities are point H1. It could be the book of life, speaking of physical life, or it could be the Lamb's book of life, speaking of spiritual life. The point is that the elect of Israel will escape, point 2. That's the idea. No matter what, Israel will escape. And this is brought out again by Yeshua in Matthew 24:22. Point 3, your cross-reference up on the board, up on the screen. Yeshua says, unless those days had been cut short, no life would have been saved. If the tribulation isn't cut short, planet Earth would become a moonscape. Nothing would have survived. No life would have been saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. So when he's referring to the elect here, he's not referring to the church because the church has been raptured. So don't automatically jump to the assumption this is a reference to the church. This is a reference to the tribulation believers, Jew and Gentile alike. They are elect as well. They're not members of the church, but they have been chosen by God for salvation. So the elect here are the Jewish and Gentile believers who come to faith during the tribulation period. For their sake, the tribulation will be cut short. Point 4. Now the elect will include the one-third of the Jewish community alive at the end of the tribulation period. And we've looked at this verse over and over again, Zechariah 13, 8 and 9. It will come about in all the land, better translated, world. It will come about in all the world, declares the Lord, that two parts in it will be cut off and perish. That's the tribulation holocaust. But the third will be left in it, and I will bring the third part through the fire. That's the faithful remnant of Israel. I'll refine them as silver is refined, test them as gold is tested. They will call on my name, and I will answer them. I will say, they are my people. And they will say, the Lord is my God. So when this occurs, when Zechariah 13, 8 and 9 finds its fulfillment, we also come to the fulfillment of Romans 11, 25 through 27. Put that down as a cross reference beside Zechariah 13, 8 and 9. When the tribulation comes to an end, we will experience the national regeneration of Israel. Paul writes, I do not want you, brethren, to be uninformed of this mystery, so that you will not be wise in your own estimation, that a partial hardening has happened to Israel. Not a full hardening, only a partial hardening. And by the way, replacement theology had already begun back in the first century. That's why Paul had to write chapters 9, 10, and 11 of the book of Romans. It was already with us in the first century. That's why these chapters were written. So a partial hardening has happened to Israel when? Until the fullness of the Gentiles has come in. So when every Gentile who has been chosen for salvation is saved, the full number of the Gentiles has come in, and the times of the Gentiles is fulfilled, then what will happen? All Israel will be saved. At that time, every living Jewish man, woman, and child will place their faith in Yeshua and become believers. And that's the description follows. Just as it is written, the deliverer will come from Zion. He will remove ungodliness from Jacob. This is my covenant with them when I take away their sins. So at the end of the tribulation period, we'll experience the national regeneration of Israel. Every living Jewish man, woman, and child will be a believer. All right, let's move on to point 7 in the middle of page 294, and we get a look at the resurrection. First of all, we'll look at the timing of the resurrection in verse 2. So now in our time frames chart, in verse 1 we were finishing up the tribulation period, but now Daniel moves into the second coming. And in verses 2 through 4, we get a glimpse of the events, some of the events that will occur at the second coming of Yeshua in verses 2 through 4. Now let's start with verse 2. Many of those who sleep in the dust of the ground will awake, these to everlasting life, but the others to disgrace and everlasting contempt. Now, Daniel actually deals with two resurrections here. Now, the actual Hebrew text of verse 2 is laid out there for you, but there's a literal translation below that. And the key words I want you to underline are the words these and those. Two groups. Let's read point 2. And many from among the sleepers of the dust of the earth shall awake. These, circle these, highlight it, whatever. These shall be unto everlasting life, contrast, but those, circle those. Those refers to the rest of the sleepers who do not awake at this time. Those shall be unto shame and everlasting contempt. Two groups. Point 3. The first group, identified by the word these. Point 3a. These refers to, first of all, the Old Testament saints. Isaiah 26, 19. These are this is Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Daniel, and others, the Old Testament saints. They're promised a resurrection in Isaiah 26, 19. God says to, through Isaiah, your dead will live. Their corpses will rise. You who lie in the dust, wake and shout for joy. For your dew is as the dew of the dawn, and the earth will give birth to the departed spirits. So the resurrection of the Old Testament saints is going to be a joyous time, won't it? Wake up! Celebrate! Your resurrection has come. It'll also be a time for the resurrection of the tribulation saints. These are those who are martyred during the tribulation period, Revelation 20, 4 through 6. Then I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment was given to them. And I saw the souls of those who have been beheaded because of their testimony of Jesus and because of the word of God. There's the persecution during the tribulation period. And those who had not worshipped the beast or his image and had not received the mark on their forehead or on their hand, what happens? They come to life and they reign with Christ for 1,000 years. The rest of the dead did not come to life until the 1,000 years were completed. Notice the second group here. Referring back to the first group, this is the first resurrection. Blessed and holy is the one who has part in the first resurrection. Over these, the second death has no power, but they will be priests of God and of the Messiah and will reign with him for 1,000 years. So this resurrection includes the Old Testament saints and it includes the tribulation saints. And so those who are alive in Israel after the tribulation will be joined by these two groups of people for entrance into the kingdom. All believers of all time will be resurrected for entrance into the kingdom. All righty. It's time for a 10-minute break. It's going to be a shorter break, and we'll pick it up on page 295 when you hear the shofar. So have your nosh out in the sukkah, but listen for the shofar. All right, we're underway again. All right, we'll pick it up the top of page 295. We're looking at the resurrection at the end of the tribulation period for entrance into the kingdom. Page 295 continues the verse, point 4, many from among the sleepers. And you could circle that word many because he's talking there about the righteous dead, not all the dead. But only the righteous dead are resurrected. And then in point 5, the others. You could circle the word the others. The others will be resurrected after the kingdom. This is the second group, referred to as those. This is the second group. And the second group is referred to in the Old Testament, in Isaiah, for example, Isaiah 24, verses 21 and 22. Come on, let's go. Yeah, it's turned on. I may have to encourage it, though. There we go. All right, Isaiah 24, verses 21 and 22 refers to the second group. So it will happen in that day that the Lord will punish the host of heaven on high and the kings of the earth on earth. They will be gathered together like prisoners in the dungeon and will be confined in prison, and after many days they will be punished. And that reference to many days there refers to the time that the unrighteous dead are in the grave in Sheol, and then finally to be punished after the Messianic kingdom, after many days. And Revelation 20, verse 5, picks this up. The rest of the dead, there's that second group, the rest of the dead will not come to life until the 1,000 years were completed. So the second group will be resurrected after the Messianic kingdom. No, these will be unbelievers. The unbelievers are resurrected after the Messianic kingdom. We'll chart this out for you in just a moment. Now notice in point 6, the two groups are also distinguished. by the phrase everlasting life. Some to everlasting life. And by the way, resurrection. The concept of resurrection of the dead is not something unknown. Abraham, for example, knew about resurrection from the dead. In Genesis 22, verse 5, dealing with the sacrifice of Isaac, Abraham says this to his servants. Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey. I and the lad will go over there." Now he's taking Isaac over there to do what? To sacrifice him, right? And yet he says, "And we will worship and return to you." So he's going to take his son over to Mount Moriah and he's going to sacrifice him, but then he says, "The two of us are going to return to you." What's he thinking? Well, Hebrews chapter 11, 19 explains his thinking process. He considered that God is able to what? Raise people from the dead, from which he also received him, Isaac, back as a type. So resurrection is not something unknown to the Old Testament saints. Also, Job 19, 25 and 26, Isaiah 26, 19, Hosea 13, 14, Psalm 16, 9 and 10. The Old Testament saints did know about resurrection. However, point 6a, this is the first mention in the Old Testament of a resurrection to everlasting life. The duration of this resurrection is now brought out. It's eternal in nature, everlasting life. And point B, this is the first resurrection mentioned in Revelation 20, verses 4 through 6. Point B, we've already looked at that verse. So what I'd like to do is hand out my next handout to you guys, in which we'll chart out the four stages or four aspects of the first resurrection, and we'll also look at the two aspects of the second resurrection. So I'm hoping these charts will make it a little clearer to you if I've muddied the waters. Maybe this will help clear up the water. So anyway, here, the next couple of slides we'll go through. I mean, we'll build these charts for you. You need any more, Stevie? One more? Okay. There you go. All right. Here we go. And we need two. How many more do we need? One for you guys. Two. Okay, everybody got all they need? Okay. And I have one here. Okay, everybody got what they need? Okay. Everybody got what they need?
Yes.
Okay, I got extras. All right, everybody got one here? All righty. You got your charts? All right, four aspects or four stages of the first resurrection. Now, this is a resurrection to resurrection life, where you don't die again. This is not a resurrection to natural life. People like Lazarus were resurrected, but they were resurrected to natural life. They died again. This first resurrection deals with a resurrection to everlasting life. Now, Jesus is the first fruits of the resurrection to everlasting life. He never died again in 1 Corinthians 15. But then the church saints, that's you and I, we will be resurrected to resurrection life at the rapture before the tribulation period. And then after the tribulation period, the Old Testament saints are raised to resurrection life or everlasting life, and the tribulation saints are also raised. Okay, does that make sense? There's your four basic groups who are raised to everlasting life. Natural life, those resurrected to natural life died again. They died again. When we're resurrected to resurrection life, we will not experience death again. That's the difference. All right. So the first resurrection encompasses four stages. Point seven. So some are resurrected to everlasting life, but some to everlasting contempt. And you can't separate the two. So this is the second resurrection, and it is for unbelievers only. The second resurrection is for unbelievers only. And it occurs in two stages. That's your second chart there. Here it is. Two stages of the second resurrection. Now, the first stage is Antichrist. He is the first casualty of the second coming. He is killed immediately at the second coming, but then he is raised by Yeshua and cast alive into the lake of fire. And that's his eternal abode, the lake of fire. So the Antichrist, he wants to be a counterfeit Jesus, right? Jesus is the first fruits of the first resurrection. Well, he gets to be a first fruit too. But it's not exactly the first fruits of what I'd like to be part of.
A rotten fruit.
There you go. And secondly, the second stage are all other unbelievers. After the Messianic kingdom, they are raised to life, but they are cast again. They are cast alive into the lake of fire. So that's the two stages of the second resurrection. This is the second death, point B. This is the second death. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, well, I shouldn't ask for questions after the class, okay? Okay, let me move on because we've got to get through this. All righty, let's move on to verse 3. Well, wait a second. Before we do that, this is the second death mentioned in Revelation chapter 20, verses 12 through 14. This is at the end of the Messianic kingdom. This is the great white throne judgment. I saw the dead, the great and the small, sitting before the throne, and books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged from the things which were written in the books, according to their deeds. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and Hades gave up the dead which were in them, and they were judged, every one of them according to their deeds. Then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death, the lake of fire. That's the resurrection to everlasting shame and contempt. Now, here's a little chart, and the morning class just about beat me on the head for not having this chart for them. So I will, instead of having you guys throw tomatoes at me, I will give you this chart. And God bless the morning class. There you go. Yeah, they put up with a lot, I tell you. They sure do. And hopefully, if I've muddied the waters regarding the first and second resurrection, perhaps this chart will make it a little clearer. All right. Got all you need there, Steve? Excellent. Thank you, sir. All right. Extras here. Extras, got enough? Oh. You got them? Okay. You got all you need here in this row? One more. There we go. Extras here. And you guys got all you need? Okay. All right. Everybody got their handout? All righty. On the chart, the first resurrection is on the top half of the timeline. The second resurrection is diagrammed on the bottom half of the chart, underneath the timeline. And as we look at the timeline, the first resurrection, Jesus, of course, is the first fruits. First, Yeshua is resurrected. Then the church saints, that's you and I right here. Then the tribulation occurs. After the tribulation, the Old Testament and tribulation saints are raised. And they are raised for entrance into the Messianic kingdom. We all go into the Messianic kingdom together. 1,000 years later, the Messianic kingdom ends and the great white throne judgment occurs. But believers will not be part of the great white throne judgment. After the great white throne judgment, we enter in the eternal state, everlasting life, the new heavens and the new earth. Now, in contrast, the second resurrection on below the line deals with, first of all, the Antichrist. When the tribulation comes to an end and Yeshua returns, he slays the Antichrist, then he raises him and immediately casts him into the lake of fire. So that's the Antichrist's eternal state. Then the Messianic kingdom occurs, and after the Messianic kingdom, all unbelievers are then raised, and they then are judged and enter the lake of fire as well. Resurrection to everlasting contempt and shame. All right, does that all make sense? Okay, those are your two resurrections. All righty, let's move on then to verse 3. Page 295, middle of the page, verse 3. Those who have insight will shine brightly like the brightness of the expanse of heaven, and those who lead the many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. So now those that are wise are compared to stars in the sky. Point A, the firmament is the reference to the sheen in the sky, the shining vault of the heavens with all the stars shining. You can't see it very much here in Southern California, but in other parts of the world you see it very clearly. And this brightness of the firmament, point C, is a symbol of the Shekinah glory. So point D, the resurrected saints will reflect the Shekinah glory the way Moses did at one time. That's the way we will look. Another group is mentioned. Point two, and they that turn many to righteousness. Point 2a, this is a reference to the evangelists of the tribulation period. For example, point B at the bottom of the page, the 144,000 Jews. They're the Jewish Billy Grahams of the tribulation period. Multitudes and multitudes of Gentiles are led to faith through the 144,000, and they receive a special blessing. Revelation 14, verses 1 through 5. This is your cross-reference. Then I looked, and behold, the Lamb was standing on Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his name and the name of his Father written on their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven, like the sound of many waters, and like the sound of loud thunder. And the voice which I heard was like the sound of harpists playing on their harps. Extremely loud orchestra here. Beautiful sound. And they sang a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and the elders. And no one could learn the song except the 144,000 who had been purchased from the earth. These are the ones who have not been defiled with women, for they have kept themselves chaste. These are the ones who follow the Lamb wherever he goes. These have been purchased from among men as first fruits to God and the Lamb. And no lie was found in their mouth. They are blameless. So there's the 144,000 Jewish evangelists and the extra blessing they receive because they lead many to righteousness during the tribulation period.
So not one of the 144,000
exists yet? No, they will come to light during the tribulation period. All right, page 296. Page 296, top of the page, point 3. Again, an emphasis on the believers shining as stars. And I couldn't resist it, you guys. You know, there's the picture. There's the picture. Let's see, do I see Roger in there? Yeah, there's Roger, right? There you are, buddy. I see. No, you're not a black hole. No, you're not. I'm sorry, you're mistaken there. Okay, do you see yourself up there? Believers will be shining as the stars forever. Great picture. And again, we'll be reflecting the Shekinah glory. Now, the rabbis see this verse as a messianic verse. We would agree with them. Here's a rabbinic comment on this verse from the Midrash Rabbah. Similarly, this world is like the betrothal, for it says, I will betroth thee unto me in faithfulness, Hosea 2:20. The actual marriage ceremony will take place in messianic days, as it says, for thy maker is thy husband, Isaiah 54:5. And then he will hand over everything to them, as it says, and here's our verse, and they that are wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn the many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever, Daniel 12:3. So we would agree with the rabbis there. This is a very messianic verse. speaking of the Messianic kingdom and the glories to follow. All right, point 8, in the middle of page 296, verse 4, the sealing of the book. But as for you, Daniel, conceal these words and seal up the book until the end of time. Many will go back and forth, and knowledge will be increased. So now Daniel is told to close up the book. Shut up the words. Point A1 there. Close up the book. And the words would be the final revelation here in chapters 10 through 12. He's also told to seal the book. And point B1A, it would be imply that he's to keep it safe, to keep it closed, and to keep it safe, point B1, for a period of time. And during that period of time, the book will not be understood. I shouldn't say probably, it will not be understood. There are too many gaps in the information. So the revelation found in Daniel will not be understood until point 2, until the book of Revelation is given, the last book of the Bible, filling in the gaps of information. That's where the book of Daniel and the book of Revelation are so important. You need to master both those books. They complement each other. They fill in the missing information. And guess what John is told? What is John told when he finishes up the book of Revelation? Is he told to seal it? Just the opposite. He said to me, "Do not seal up the words of the prophecy of this book, for the time is near." And so a very different message given to John. So point 2 at the bottom of the page, again, the book that he's talking about is the book of Daniel. Chapters 1 through 9 already written. Chapters 10 through 12 finishing up the book. It's now complete. And Daniel's last vision and last revelation has been given. Page 297. Point C at the top of the page. Again, notice that phrase. He's to seal up the book even to the time of the end. That reference to eschatology, the time of the end being point 1, the Great Tribulation. So the book is to be sealed and preserved primarily for the Great Tribulation. Because the content of Daniel and the content of Revelation are primarily for those who experience the tribulation period. They're the ones that are going to have to need to know that information to make it through the tribulation.
Okay. Is it unsealed now?
Well, it's not sealed, but we don't understand it the way the tribulation believers will. Okay? Primarily it's going to be for them, yes. In fact, we can understand it to a certain extent, and that's the point of point D. Point D says, many will run to and fro. This is not a reference to airplanes and spacecraft. All right? This doesn't refer to travel, but it refers, point one, to a quest for knowledge. That same phrase is used speaking of a quest for knowledge at least 4 times in the Bible, and you see your cross-references there. Let's just look at Jeremiah chapter 5, verse 1, point B. Here's that same phrase being used. Jeremiah is told to roam to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem and look now and take note and seek in her open squares. If you can find a man, if there's one who does justice, who seeks truth, then I will pardon her. So Jeremiah is told to roam to and fro looking for a righteous man. He's looking for knowledge. So this running to and fro, point 2, deals with seeking knowledge, and point 2a, knowledge about the end days in general, and knowledge about the book of Daniel in particular. And there's a little encouragement to all of us. Point E, as people seek knowledge of the book of Daniel, that knowledge will be increased. Now point 1, tells us that the word knowledge in the Hebrew is accompanied with the definite article, the knowledge. So he's talking about a particular knowledge here. And so point two, the knowledge of the book of Daniel shall be increased. So to paraphrase the verse, Dr. F. says, many shall run to and fro in their desire for knowledge of last things, and finding it in the book of Daniel, because it would have been preserved to the end, their knowledge shall be increased. So I think we fall into that group too. Because we are, you are, all of us here are students who are going to and fro looking for knowledge in the Bible of the end times. Now, the Midrash Rabbah also sees this as a messianic verse. In the Midrash Rabbah, we come across this comment. The rabbi said he was about to reveal the end, the messianic redemption to them, but it was hidden from them. Rabbi Judah said it in the name of Rabbi Eliezer ben Abina. The two men was the end revealed, only to be hidden again from them. And they are these, Jacob and Daniel. And here's the hiding, the rabbis say. But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book. Verse 4. And then a footnote after this quote reads, implying that the book, the secret of Messiah's advent, had hitherto been open to him. So that's an interesting idea there, that Daniel had to close this all up. And the coming of the Messiah was hidden from him at that time. But they do see this as a messianic verse. They see the book of Daniel as dealing with the messianic redemption. All right, page 298. Top of the page, point C. We come to the conclusion of the matter, and here we change time frames again. In verses 2 through 4, we've been looking very briefly at the second coming. But now, in verses 5 through 13, we return to the prophet's present time, which is the end of the Babylonian exile. We get back to real time here again. So we begin with verse 5 and the appearance of two angelic beings. Then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, two others were standing, one on this bank of the river and the other on that bank of the river. So in addition to the angel that's been talking to him, he sees two others on both sides of the river. And again, we learn back in Daniel 10:4, point B, that this is the Tigris River. Remember, back in chapter 10, he began to receive this revelation. And he starts by saying, on the 24th day of the first month, while I was by the bank of the great river, that is the Tigris. And remember, Daniel spent most of his time in Babylon. And here's the Euphrates River to the south. But he has journeyed now up a little north to the Tigris River. And somewhere here, he, in this area, somewhere near the Tigris River, he had received this revelation. We don't know exactly where, but we're back in real time. Point three. It appears that these two angels appear to serve as witnesses, two witnesses. And this refers to the Old Testament principle that a matter is established by two or three witnesses. It cannot be established by one witness. An example of that principle is Deuteronomy 19:15. A single witness shall not rise up against a man on account of any iniquity or any sin which he has committed. On the evidence of two or three witnesses, a matter shall be confirmed. So apparently these angels are there to confirm this revelation. Now in verse 6, a question is asked to the man clothed in linen. Verse 6. And one said to the man dressed in linen, who was above the rivers, the waters of the river, how long will it be until the end of these wonders? So the angel that he first saw in chapter 10 is now standing above the waters of the river Tigris. He's standing between the two other angels. And the question asked is regarding the duration of these events. How long? Point B2 at the bottom of the page. What's the duration of the persecution? And this tells us that angels are not fully informed about God's prophetic program. They want to learn too. And Peter emphasizes that in 1 Peter 1:12. Peter says in 1 Peter 1:12, "It was revealed to them," speaking of the prophets, "that they were not serving themselves, but you, in these things which now have been announced to you through those who preach the gospel to you by the Holy Spirit sent from heaven, things into which angels long to look." And so this angel is now asking, how long is this going to last? So angels are intelligent beings, but they are not divine. And so, like us, they are very curious about eschatology. So, you know, the next time you go to a prophecy conference, there may be a bunch of angels floating around trying to get some information as well. So we're not alone when we go to prophecy conferences. There may be some angels peering in on this class. Who knows? The answer comes in page 299 in verse 7. "I heard the man dressed in linen who was above the waters of the river, as he raised his right hand and his left hand toward heaven and swore by him who lives forever and ever that it would be for a time, times, and half a time. And as soon as they finish shattering the power of the holy people, all these events will be completed." Now, point 2A. When a man solemnly swears in the Bible, usually he only raises one hand toward heaven. But here, the man in linen raises both hands toward heaven. So this is an expression of double solemnity. This is a symbol of an extremely solemn statement. That's point B. So we're going to receive double assurance that this is going to happen. We have two hands raised, and we also have two witnesses to this. And then, point three, who does he swear by? He swears by God himself. So you can bet the farm, you can bet your retirement on this. How long is this going to last? Time, times, and half a time, 3.5 years. Point 4B, the second half of the tribulation. Now, when we come to point 5, we come to a mark it up moment. You need to mark up point 5, dealing with the purpose and end of the tribulation period. It says, "When they have made an end of breaking in pieces the power of the holy people, all these things will be finished." Now, this comment, breaking in pieces, the same word is used in Psalm 2:9 in regard to the Gentiles. In Psalm 2:9, God says, "You shall break them with a rod of iron, you shall shatter them like earthenware." A very strong word. So this breaking into pieces the power of the holy people refers basically to two aspects. First of all, it refers to the fact that the modern state of Israel is going to collapse in the middle of the tribulation period. Our physical power, our political power, our military power is going to be shattered in the tribulation period. But the word also refers to the human will. Our stubborn will also be broken through the events of the tribulation period. And we are known as a stubborn people, right? Of course, right. Who's getting the A there? All right. For example, Deuteronomy 31:27 and many other places, "I know your rebellion and your stubbornness." This has got to be broken. And our stubborn will be shattered through the events of the tribulation period. And the rabbis agree with us. This is not an interpretation that's anti-Semitic or anything. In the Artscroll Tanakh series, the rabbis write, When Israel's power, literally yod their hand, which is a metaphor for power, when Israel's power has been dissipated, then the Redeemer will come. So our power, both our will and our strength, have to be shattered. So that is a major purpose for the tribulation period, to force us to seek God and seek His righteousness instead of depending upon ourselves. And again, that will lead to what? Revelation 11, 25 through 27, at the end of the times of the Gentiles, all Israel will be saved. This breaking of our stubbornness will lead to our our national regeneration. No, he's an angel. All right, I have 8:30, and we're just about through, so hang in with me here for another few minutes, and we'll finish up Daniel. Verse 8, Daniel's request. As for me, I heard, but could not understand, so I said, "My Lord, what will be the outcome of these events?" So he understands this, but, I mean, he hears this, but he doesn't quite get it, and that's understandable, so he asks for more clarification, point B1. So he's bewildered about the final outcome, point BA, 2A, and point 2B, the latter end. So he asks, what will be the final event? He doesn't ask how long. Point 3A, what will be the event that will bring this to an end? The answer is never given to Daniel. That's because Daniel already had the answer. The answer came in Daniel 7, verses 13 and 14. The coming of the Son of Man. I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like a Son of Man was coming. And he came up to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion, glory, and a kingdom, that all the peoples, nations, and men of every language might serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which will not pass away. And his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed. See, Daniel already had the answer to that question. Page 302. In page 302, point B at the top of the page, we come to verse 10. Page 302. Everybody there? Did I miss 301? Ah, yes, I sure did. Okay, turned too many pages there. Verse 9, page 301. The response that is given to Daniel. Verse 9. He said, "Go your way, Daniel, for these words are concealed and sealed up until the end of time." So Daniel is not rebuked for his question, but he's told, point 1A, don't ask any more. And he's not given an answer. So he's to stop asking questions, but he's not to worry about it. And you see, God requires faith from Daniel as well. Daniel wasn't given all the answers, and neither are we, because we all walk in faith. So why? Why is he given this response? For the words are shut up and sealed. The answer to his question is found in the book of Daniel, and again back in chapter 7. But the answer is really not meant for Daniel. Point 3. The words are shut up and sealed until the end of time. So more about this book will be known later. It's not meant primarily for Daniel, but primarily for those in the Great Tribulation. And we are fortunate enough to be able to understand more of the book than Daniel understood. Page 302, verse 10. A reference is now made to the wise and the wicked. Many will be purged, purified and refined, but the wicked will act wickedly, and none of the wicked will understand, but those who have insight will understand. So point one, the wise are the tribulation saints who purify themselves and make themselves white and who are refined. They'll get it because they'll read the book of Daniel. But point two, in contrast, the wicked continue to do wickedly, they will not understand, even in the tribulation period. Verse 11, a time period is now to us. A time period now appears in verse 11. From the time that the regular sacrifice is abolished and the abomination of desolation is set up, there will be 1,290 days. So this new time period comes into view. What's the beginning of the 1,290 days? Point 1a, when the continual burnt offering is taken away. In other words, point B, the beginning of this time period is when the abomination of desolation is set up. All right, let's move on to page 303. Point 2 at the top of the page. What will be the end of this time period? Point 2a. We know that the second half of the tribulation is exactly 1,260 days. But this goes for 1,290 days. Point B. The conclusion is that the abomination of desolation is going to be allowed to continue for 30 days, 1 month beyond the end of the tribulation. Apparently, the tribulation temple will be allowed to stand 30 more days before it's torn down. Now, you can read over Rashi's calculations in point 3 to the bottom of the page. I don't think it's all that worth looking into. So let's take a look at page 304 and another time period that's introduced. In verse 12, a second time period is introduced. How blessed is he who keeps waiting and attains to the 1,335 days. So now, point D1, this is an additional 45 days beyond the 1,290. It's also an additional 75 days beyond the 1,260 days where the tribulation ended. Point 3 is an important point. The one who attains that day, the 1,335th day, is the one who is blessed. And the blessing will be the beginning of the millennial kingdom. So between the end of the tribulation period, point 5, after the 1,260 days, and the start of the kingdom is a 75-day interval. A 75-day interval. What in the world is the purpose for this 75-day interval? Well, I'm going to give you your last handout to the book of Daniel. And this will not only give you purposes for the 75-day interval, but will also chart out the time frames that are involved here, so hopefully they will be clear and not confusing. All right, you need two more? All right, very good. And there's two. All right, I've got one extra here. And here's another one. Do we need one more here? One more, okay, I'll bring it back to you. Need one as well? Okay, any extras back here? You need two. Okay. You guys that needed one or two, raise your hands. You needed two here. And we needed one here. Okay. All righty. Everybody got your chart? All right. Let's quickly go through. Why in the world does this 75-day interval exist? Here is a chart of the 75-day interval. We have the middle of the tribulation at this point. 1,260 days pass, and we come to the end of the tribulation. Another month passes, and we come to the end of the abomination of desolation, the 1,290th day. Another 45 days pass, and we come to the time of blessing, the 1,335th day, the blessing of the Messianic Kingdom. All right, why do we have the 75-day interval here? Well, a number of reasons, but basically this is preparing the world for the kingdom. Preparing the world for the kingdom. This is not an exhaustive list, but there's a lot to be done to prepare the world for the kingdom. One, first of all, the Antichrist has to be resurrected, and then he has to be tossed into the lake of fire along with the false prophet. We got to get rid of them. Satan has to be cast into the abyss. The judgment of the Gentiles has to occur. The abomination of desolation has to be removed. There has to be the resurrection of the Old Testament saints and the resurrection of the tribulation saints. The renovating of the earth, because it will be devastated. The building of the millennial temple, and on and on and on. A lot of stuff has to happen. So it's going to be a busy, busy time. Busy time for us. Well, yeah, at least, yeah. Preparation for the kingdom there. So point six, middle of the page, the purpose is to ready the world for the kingdom. And an example, removal of the abomination of desolation. And I listed a whole bunch of other things as well. And again, notice point 6b, blessed is he that waits and comes to the 1,335th day. Now this tells us that many will not make it to that day. Point B2, many who survive the tribulation will not make it into the kingdom. Why? And the answer is the judgment of the Gentiles. The judgment of the Gentiles occurs somewhere in this interval, somewhere in this period of time. And these are Gentile unbelievers that do not survive the tribulation period. They're referred to in Joel chapter 3, verses 1 through 3. For behold, in those days and at that time, when I restore the fortunes of Judah and Jerusalem, the kingdom, I will gather all the nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat. And there I will enter into judgment with them on behalf of my people and my inheritance, Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations, and they have divided up my land. They have also cast lots for my people, traded a boy for a harlot, and sold a girl for wine that they may drink. So the nations are judged for their persecutions of the Jewish people in Joel 3. They are also, the judgment of the Gentiles is also brought out very clearly in Matthew 25, verses 31 through 46. Then when the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them one from another, as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep on his right and the goats on the left. And then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. So we have the sheep Gentiles on the right and the goat Gentiles on the left. He says to the sheep Gentiles, for I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was stranger, and you invited me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. And then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? And when did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, here's a third group, the sheep Gentiles, the goat Gentiles, and the brothers of mine, the Jewish people, even to the least of them, you did it to me. And then he will say to those on his left, the goat Gentiles, depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. Naked, you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they themselves also will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not take care of you? And then he will answer them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. These will go away to eternal punishment. That's the goat Gentiles, but the righteous into eternal life. So that's a very, very important judgment that happens in the 75-day interval. The judgment of the Gentiles, when it's over, only believers are allowed to enter the kingdom. Only believers enter the kingdom. Now, in closing, and we're just about there, thanks for your patience. This 45-day interval becomes the basis for the two Messiah theory that the rabbis hold to today. And it also reveals that the rabbis understand that there'll be two comings of the Messiah. Point 7 at the bottom of the page, quoting Rashi. Rashi's got it wrong, but he affirms that there's two comings of the Messiah. He says, this is the 45-year period that the King Messiah is destined to be hidden after he is revealed and then revealed again. Two comings of the Messiah King. And also Rabbi Berechiah and Rambam. Rabbi Berechiah said in the name of Rav Levi, the last Redeemer, Messiah, will be like the first Redeemer, Moses. Just as the first Redeemer revealed himself and then was hidden for 3 months, and then Rambam adds to it, so the last Redeemer, down here, so the last Redeemer will reveal himself and then be hidden, only to be revealed again. So when the rabbis tell you there's only one coming of the Messiah, take them to these sections. They understand there will be two comings of the Messiah, just like with Moses. And again, this is the basis for the two Messiah theory. The two Messiah theory reads like this. Rambam holds that after 1,290 years, the Messiah from the tribe of Ephraim, Mashiach ben Yosef, will come. It will be his job to gather the dispersed Jews to wage war with Gog, king of Magog, and he will die in this war. Then Messiah, son of the seed of David, Mashiach ben David, will come and complete the redemption. And the source for this is the rabbinic writing Perkei Hechalos. So that is where the rabbis have come down today on a two Messiah theory. But they do recognize there is one Messiah who comes twice. So you need to keep that in mind when they throw the two Messiah theory at you. All right, page 305, our final page, verse 13. Page 305, verse 13. But as for you, go your way to the end, and then you will enter into rest and rise again for your allotted portion at the end of the age. So again, Daniel, go your way. Point 1b, there's no more information for you to receive. And he's to go his way until the end. Until the end of the times of the Gentiles, the end of the tribulation times. Point 3, you will rest. That's a reference to the fact that Daniel will die. And notice point B, he's already very old. He's over 80 years old. But he won't stay dead. Point 4, you shall stand in your lot. The lot is the inheritance that Daniel will receive. So Daniel will be resurrected along with the Old Testament saints, and we will get to see him in the Messianic kingdom. And it's at the end of the days. He will be resurrected during that 75-day period when the Old Testament saints are resurrected for entrance into the kingdom. Now, let's just close our study with a final comment from Dr. Walvoord in his commentary. He says, for Christians living in the age of grace and searching for understanding of these difficult days, which may be bringing to a close God's purpose in his church, the book of Daniel, as never before, casts a broad light upon contemporary events, foreshadowing the consummation which may not be far distant. He wrote this in the 70s. If God is reviving his people Israel politically, allowing the church to drift into indifference and apostasy, and permitting the nations to move toward centralization of political power, it may not be long before the time of the end will overtake the world. When the plan of God has run its full course, it will be evident then, with even more clarity than at present, that God has not allowed a word to fall to the ground. All will be fulfilled. And with that we say, Amen, come Lord Jesus. Right? All right, with that we bring the study of the book of Daniel to a close. So let me go ahead and close in prayer, and I'll turn you loose. Thank you for your extra 20 minutes here. Father, we do want to thank you for the book of Daniel and the fact that it takes us to the end of time and the fact that it leaves us with hope. We may be like Daniel. We may die our natural death. But like Daniel, we will stand in the Messianic Kingdom to receive our inheritance. And we're grateful for the hope that the book of Daniel leads before us. This life is not all there is. Help us to be willing to share it with those with whom we come in contact, to the Jew first, but also to the Greek. So in Yeshua's name we ask this. Amen. All right, thank you guys.